welcome to the Dark Side of Soul podcast. This is Joe.
This is Sean.
We're entering the 10th lunar month? Yes, yeah, the 10th lunar month, even though it's the 11th solar month right now. Mm-hmm. And this is a good one. Even though, Sean, you said, I thought it was the odd ones that were the big ones, but the 10th one seems like it has a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on. So yes, the odd ones, like, so last time we did the 9th lunar month, so the Gugu, yeah, that's, go back, everyone, if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to all the important traditions. But
we have a whole, a whole group of stuff about that. It's called a Gugu cluster.
Yeah. The 10th lunar month is very big. In the past it was, anyway, because winter was coming, and so there was a lot of preparation, and we were just chatting before we started recording how there were so many food traditions that were important during that time, and they're, unfortunately, a lot of them are gone. They're not being followed anymore, but food and eating communally and things like that was a huge thing to do at this time, because people were preparing for winter. You're getting rid of food that you didn't want to go bad, as you're saying, Joey, like, you're fattening up for the winter.
Yeah, get ready for hibernation.
Yeah. And worries of food were, you know, of food becoming scarce would start to set in right around this time. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, do I have enough food for the family for the winter? So you're doing all your preparations and things like that. So all this was really important stuff for the common people in the past. And these traditions are mostly gone, of course, unfortunately, but mostly because the worries are gone. But it wouldn't have been that long ago, just a few decades ago, that people still would have been concerned about food throughout the winter in Korea. So yeah, so many traditions focused on food. Unfortunately, we're not going to talk a lot about that because it's just so much of it. We might come back to it later in another episode. And so
you like your food episodes, don't you? Yeah,
we haven't done too many. I think people keep asking for more.
Yeah, but they tend to be the popular ones.
Yeah. And so, but anyway, so the 10th lunar month, you know, is called it'd be Shipwol, but Koreans pronounce, but Koreans pronounce it as Shiwol.
Yeah.
So Shiwol, the 10th.
My favorite He-Man character.
She-Ra.
Shiwol. Yeah.
Shiwol. remember, she's her own character. She had her own show, man.
Okay. Well, He-Man's my favorite She-Ra character. Okay.
Okay. He had his own show too. They both had their own show.
Okay.
There were good crossover episodes though.
Sidetrack. If you can dig on YouTube, there's a 1986 Macy's Thanksgiving parade that has the most epic float ever, and it's the He-Man float. And it was so elaborate. I mean, you're looking at this thing, and the thing is shaking because it's so tall and has so many every character on it.
Most powerful balloon in the universe.
Well, no, it wasn't a balloon. It was a float. So it was, they're bringing it down the street, and all people in costumes as all the characters are waving to everyone. You can see that it's wobbling because it's really top heavy.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'd be so scared if I was on top of that float going down the parade, man.
Mm. So anyway, Shiwol, yes, the 10th month, also called Haewol in the past. People would have had another name for it.
You would have been Shiwol, warrior princess.
Stop it.
Right. I'm sorry. See, I always hijack Sean's shows.
So the first day of the month starts on Gregorian calendar, November 13th, concludes on December 12th, and it has 30 days. So that's the breakdown. That's the setup and how it all looks on in numbers when you crunch those numbers. So a few things, quite a few important things do happen in this month, even though it is an even month. One of the big things is the Haitian Jay. And Haitian Jay literally is the sea god rite, ritual. And this was part of a bigger rite and ritual that was called the Sonangje normally took, it still takes place on the East Coast around Samchok, and Shinnamal is the area where this kind of traditionally took place, in Samchok City, which is in Gangwon Province, right on the East Coast. So some of the key things that were important about this is that it would often occur on the first horse day of the 10th month. Now, I don't think I've talked too much about this, but every day has an animal assigned to it, a zodiac animal. And I think maybe in the first lunar month, I talked about this. It's now a long time ago.
So don't, remind us.
Yeah, I don't remember. So animals are attached to certain days. So for example, the first day of the 10th month this year is an Ulhe, which is a pig day. And then there are different animals throughout. So the second day is a Pyeongcha, which is a rat. And then there's the Jeongchuk, which is the ox. And so the first horse day, which is called the O-il, the O refers to horse. The first horse day is the 8th day of the 10th month this year. And that will fall on November 20th. Okay. And that's called the Im-o this year, the Im-o. So these festivals were usually held around this time, if not on the actual day. Also held on Jungwo Daeburam, the first full moon of the lunar month.
Day.
Yeah, the nutcracking day. So there's a lot to be said about not only the horse day, but about the festivals and things like that. But I'm just going to keep it to its association to the fairly well-known legend of Heishindang. So Heishindang is an area on the East Coast, in Samchok, or near Samchok. So Heishin means sea god.
Yeah, sea god, Hei.
Yeah, and then Dang, Heishindang. So like an altar, a shrine. So Heishindang literally means sea god shrine or altar. Mm. And the legend, there are variations of the legend. But when they name the two key players in the legend, they're called Eirang, which is a young woman, and her lover, Dukbae. So the person she loved, they were engaged, not her lover, like she was having an affair. They were young, but they were, in some of the variations said to be engaged, they were to be married. There are quite a few variations, but Joe, you have a legend that is linked to this that you share on your tour. Oh, your mic's off, Joe.
Yeah. You want me to talk about it now?
Yeah. I mean, I asked you earlier today, so do you want to share it?
Oh, I thought you were going to share it. Oh,
no.
Because it's
on your tour. I don't share this on my tour. I used to, but a long time ago, but right. It's since been taken off my tour.
So
you're the variation that you know of this tale.
So back in 1592, the Japanese, we had the Hideyoshi invasions. The Japanese Hideyoshi had basically united Japan, but it had, after lots of time of Japan being at war, and now that he's trying to create peace, but he's got a lot of antsy warriors that want to pick a fight with someone in the bar, he sends them off to Korea. So they start trying to invade Korea, and there's this village on the East Coast where they saw the Japanese invaders coming, and all the virgins of the village leapt from the cliffs into the sea rather than be deflowered by the Japanese invaders, because we've spoken before that if you were... This was the belief at the time. If you were raped and you did not, commit suicide, you were dishonoring your ancestors. So they just nipped it in the bud right there. So that all passed. And then long time later, fishermen were complaining they weren't catching any fish. So the village elders got together to figure out what was going on. And they concluded, it must be the angry ghosts of those virgins. So what they did is their solution to this was to get all the men of the village together, walk down to the water, line up along the edge, pull down their trousers, and jerk off into the sea, as you would. Because, you know, I mean, virgin ghosts, that's what they really want. You know, giant bukkake fest. But I'm sure you're wanting to know, yes, the fish came back.
Right. So that's a variation of the tale. And as far as I know, this is a much later variation that's linked to the earlier version of Eirang and Dokbae. So just very quickly, the way older versions of it, it doesn't involve the Japanese invasions, doesn't involve the Imjin War, and it just involves Eirang, who's a young woman, who asks Dokbae, essentially her fiance, to take her out to pick seaweed from a rock that was out in the harbor. And so he said sure, and he took her out, and then he sailed back in. He was working in the fields, and a storm moved in, the water got rough, and Eirang died. She drowned. And then after that, you know, the same thing. Fish, no one can catch any fish. Whenever the men would go out in their fishing boats, they would capsize. Several fishermen died. And so they're trying to figure out what they could do to appease, or figure out, first of all, figure out what was going on. And then one story is that a fisherman, he gets really drunk, and he goes down to the ocean. He starts cursing at the ocean. He's swearing at it and cursing at it. And since he was drunk, he drops his drawers, and he pisses into the ocean.
Like you and I do all the time.
Yeah. And then the next day, all the men are out fishing, and that one fisherman comes back, and he's got a full load of fish, and the other ones still didn't catch anything. And a lot of them didn't fish because they were fearing capsizing. And so they asked him, like, well, where did you go? He's like, it's the same place. Didn't go very far. I'm afraid to go too far from shore. And they said, well, we've been fishing around there today too. We didn't catch anything. And so they asked him, like, did you do anything different? He's like, no, it's fishing the same ways. It's like, well, did you do anything different these days? It's like, well, I don't know. Like, you know, I was cursing at the ocean, and then the story just breaks down where they all find out that he peed into the ocean. And then they figure out, they're like, oh, so that's what happened. So Eirang enjoyed seeing this guy's lad hanging out while he was taking a pee, and so allowed him to fish. And so some variations say, yes, they all go down, they line up, and they pee into the ocean. I do think the ejaculation part of it is a much later addition to the story.
I think that makes more sense, unless Eirang was really into golden showers.
Well, the whole point is not what they were doing, just that she saw a penis.
Yeah.
Not what they were actually doing with it. Yeah. That's the key. That's the key point. And then that links then to what happens later. So it makes more sense through the folk tradition what eventually happened and what is still being done today. So what they eventually do, they go to the nearby the coast, like the hillside, and they carve a phallic symbol out of a tree or a stone or something like that. And they create all these phallic symbols along the coast. And then she becomes enshrined. They actually deify her. Hmm. And then she becomes the Haitian.
Oh,
she's the ocean goddess. So because she's deified, and that's how they continually appease her, and they still do it. They still do it today.
Pee in the ocean.
They still pee in the ocean, only at night though, when no one's watching.
Mm.
And other variations have the story where her ghost, Eirang, comes to one of the elder fishermen in a dream, which is a big motif: ghosts appearing in dreams. Koreans have a really strong belief in this, especially in the past. Go back and listen to our episode about dreams, actually, get more information about that. And so So then he gets the idea from her that they have to build her a shrine of some sort. Every variation includes a penis in some way. there's birds and lads flying in some form or another in all the variations.
Just the male fantasies of what women want.
Well, see, that's how we can view it today, but that's not how it was likely viewed from the people in the past, because the idea of sexual union represents reproduction, production, and birth. So the folk tradition of it, even though it might sound, you know, chauvinistic or misogynistic today, we're viewing it through our modern lens, it's very likely not how it was being viewed in the past. The idea of sexual union and appeasing goddesses with phallic symbols simply represented the idea of creation, bringing something into being or bringing something back. That's the folk line of all of it.
I don't know. Yeah. Okay. I just think they're kind of more deistic dick pics.
So I tend to reject the idea that it was through the modern lens. It's not the way to look at these older tales.
It's not the modern lens. It's my adolescent lens that I've never gotten rid of. That's what it is.
Well, that's your problem.
You know who you're talking to, Sean.
So, Adang is still enshrined. You can go to Haitian Dung. There's still big phallic statues everywhere.
Yeah,
big birds hanging around everywhere.
Go to a phallic restaurant that has like phallic salt and pepper shakers and stuff. Yeah.
Well, you know, it also linked to this, there was a time with these offerings and different goddesses, they would actually give ox scrotums, offer ox scrotums to goddesses.
Mm.
So there you go.
Mm.
So
a little harder to get, you know, it's like, it's almost like, it sounds like Monty Python a bit.
Mm.
Give me an ox scrotum.
Spam, 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 spam.
A strawberry and an ox scrotum.
Scrotum, scrotum, scrotum. Balls, balls, balls. So there you go. So visit Haitian Dung. So unfortunately, I do think it's become kind of a jokey place where people visit now, and they kind of laugh at it because it's just the way it is. But it's deeply linked to old folk beliefs and folk traditions. So you're visiting a place that has a very deep cultural background.
Yeah,
if you go there.
But do look up the images on YouTube when you're not at work, and you see the funnies of the grannies riding the big cocks,
right?
Like
right,
like their horses, their cowboys,
yeah.
Man.
It's yeah. Great. And they're going spam, 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 spam.
Oh my gosh! If someone just listened to this out of context,
yeah, they just turned it on.
Yeah, we're talking about grannies riding big cocks, cowboys. Yeah. All right. There we go.
Moving on.
We have the expletive check mark on our pod.
Every single episode. It's an F word, nothing but dirty fucking language. Okay, yeah. So another thing that's important, or was important in the past, was something called the Sangdal Gosa. So keeping in mind, talked lots about this, Gosa are rituals that are usually conducted in the home or in a restaurant or something like that. If you open a new establishment, or even a car in modern times, they'll have for taxis, if people get a car, they will have a gosa ritual, a rite to ask for good fortune, blessings and peace and things like that. So the Sangdal Gosa did take place in the 10th lunar month, and it would honor the household gods. So especially ones that oversaw peace and safety in the home. So that would be the Sungju. And the Sungju, of course, is the central god of the home, linked to the idea of actual construction, architecture. So linked to the old legend of building a home. And so the idea is that there's an old story that is linked to the Sungju. This god taught Koreans how to build homes. So still a revered god in the old tradition. There's the Zhouang, which is the fire god, which is who's enshrined in the kitchen. The Samshin, who Samshin Halmoni or Samshin Halme, which is the god of childbearing and in child raising. And then the Taju, which is the god of the earth, of the courtyard, the land around your home, all the really important gods in old household religion. So all of them were honored on the Sangdal Gosa. Now, the day itself generally did happen in the 10th lunar month, but it wasn't a specific day. Households could choose when they would do this. The first horse day, the Owil that I just talked about, was sometimes preferred because it was an auspicious day. It could be rather small, just something that was conducted communally or by the family in their homes, or be a little bit larger. People would get shamans to come and perform the ritual. Usually involved offerings of rice, cakes, duck, and red bean. Another thing that was very important is one of my favorite items from old households of Korea, and it was called the Shinju Danji. I love these. The Shinju, the Shinju Danji were the spirit jars, and they'd be filled with grain. And I've been to old homes today where people still have this. They'd fill them with grain, and they're kept as part of household worship. And on the Sangdal Gosa, the old grain is taken out of the jar, the spirit jar. Mm-hmm. And then replaced with newly harvested grain. So whatever grain was harvested just recently, that would be put into the jar. And then it's covered over with paper, and there's a top put on it and whatnot. And then it's generally not touched. It might be moved for worship or something like that, but the grain is generally not touched. And then the old grain in many traditions generally has to be eaten. You have to eat the old grain.
Wow.
So you take it out. And one of the ways that they would do it is that they would actually bake it. One of the few old types of Korean food that would be baked. It'd be baked into kind of a dough, according to old records, old seasonal records, which is something that's really lost. You rarely see, there's things like jinpang, the steamed bread and stuff like that. But you don't really hear a lot about anything, a dough that's baked. Very, very rare. This is your wheelhouse. Do you know of, can you think of any doughs that are baked? that are not introduced?
I've seen dragon bread before. Before, way back in Insadong, there used to be, for temporary time, there was a dragon bread, which was like the bready dumpling, but it was done in, it was cooked in something like a tandoori type of contraption.
Oh, wow.
It was like a chimney. It was like a chimney looking oven. And there was a street food in Insadong. And so, but the top of it was shaped like a dragon where the smoke came out of. Yeah. And these are delicious. So they were just like your usual meat filled wangmandu, or not wangmandu, but the hopang.
Hopang. Oh, right.
Yeah. Like that. The really fluffy ones, or some people know them as bao. The guy would stick them to the walls of the oven and bake them, and they were so hot.
Oh, wow. It's like a tandoori.
Tandoor. You're right. Right. Tandoor.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was so cool. And just so briefly, it was so brief that it was there. I don't care what else. That was when Insadong was really experimenting with a lot of street foods. That's when we had the blowjob ice cream.
Back when Insadong was cool.
Yeah. Which still, is it was a cane shaped like, it was like shaped like a J or a cane, and they would fill, it was rice, and they would fill it up with soft serve ice cream, and just eating. There was just not a dignified way to eat it. You always looked like you were having a blowjob with white stuff going down your dripping down your chin.
Those things are gross too.
We had a lot of fun. Yeah, Insadong used to have so many different types of street foods.
Right.
No.
So go back and listen. Go back and listen to our Insadong episode. That's our drunk episodes. We get really angry.
Well, yeah, we got drunk and angry. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. And so anyway, so the grain would be taken out of the Shinju Danji. It would have to be consumed in some way. And like I said, one of the ways, according to seasonal records, was that it could be baked in some form or another. Mm. But a key thing is that every family member, every single person who lived in that particular household would have to eat that grain. They'd have to consume it because it would bring you good fortune. It was the grain that was kept in the home for a year as an offering to the household spirits, the household gods, and then eating it showed your devotion to them. You're devout. So, and interesting thing was that no non-family members would be given that grain to eat. So the old grain taken out of your Shinju Danji would not be given to non-family members because that could invite impurities into your home. So very interesting. And then you fill it up with new grain and then you put it away and then you have your spirit jars ready for a new year. Mm-hmm. Other regional customs linked to that right around the Sangdalgosa was the idea of putting ropes across your door, kind of to keep ropes people out.
Your door.
Okay. Yeah, to keep people out. And they would often be colored gold. It was another thing too. They may be colored gold. And you put them across your door to keep people away. When people see that, they're like, okay, I'm not going to knock on their door. The whole point of that was to keep strangers away because they could also bring impurities into your home during the Gosa. You have to be very, very careful during that Gosa. So, yeah, so other things like that. And this generally was done also in the capital region around Seoul. So, yeah, so those are some of the things that are linked to the Sangdalgosa. Again, a tradition that is mostly gone. But like I said, I have seen the Shinju Danji in many older places in the countryside anyway. A couple other things that happen during the 10th month is the Sosal. Sosal means small snow. This is the 20th Jalgi, the lunar terms, the solar terms that I'm talking about in every episode in this series. And this year, this happens on the 10th day of the 10th lunar month, which will be November 22nd. Uh-huh. This is when temperatures become cold enough to snow. We get snowy temperatures. And if you remember last year, Joe, Sosol hasn't happened yet as we're recording, but we did have snow by the end of November last year.
We might have snow this weekend. And
yeah,
we are in the third week of November now.
The second full week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Second full week, right at the beginning of the second full week. Yeah. We're right at the, and it's right today as we're recording. It's the second day of the 10th lunar month as we're recording. And so so temperatures get cold enough to snow. And wasn't a traditional holiday, wasn't a day off, or nothing really special was done during this. It was just a day that was observed, acknowledged, and more than observed. And a key thing too by this time is that your winter preparations should be full on. You should be really ready for winter by now. If you're not, you're pushing it. Kimjang is usually done by this time. People generally would have had it done, and their kimchi is starting to get stored. So their winter stores of kimchi ready and put away. There was some weather lore though that was connected to this day. And one of the things that was, of course, temperature was a big thing connected to this day. Cold temperatures meant that there would be a good barley harvest in the following season.
Wow.
But more importantly, around this time, if not on Sosol, generally then around Sosol, or sometimes a little bit later, according to some traditions, even closer to the 20th day of the 10th month, their cold temperatures represented something called the Sondol Chui. So Chui means cold, Chupji, Chuo, Chupta, and Sondol was the name of a ferryman in the 13th century. And so cold weather around this time was the Sondo Chui, And then winds, cold winds in particular, were called the Sondol Padam. So the winds, Sondol's winds. And this references a legend, the legend of Sondol. So I'll just share a part of the legend that that I've written that's going to appear in my the book that I'm going to release about different ghosts, alleged ghost experiences in modern Korea. I'm just going to read them because I talk about it very briefly.
Teaser.
So as I've written, again, this is unedited. My editor hasn't seen this yet. So here we go. In 1232, Mongolia launched an invasion of Korea's Goryeo dynasty, the second within a year. Under extreme pressure from Cheu, a military official with considerable power in government, King Gojong retreated the royal court from the capital Sungdo to Ganghwa Island. Legend says that while sailing across the strait, Sondol, the skipper of the king's ferry, was uncertain of the safest way across. The king suspected Sondol of attempting treason and staring them into a trap. The king ordered Sondol beheaded right there on the ferry. Before his execution, Sondol told the others to dip a gourd into the water off the bow and to follow its course. With the sailor now dead, the others did as he advised. They steered the ferry through the wake of the gourd and found safety on Ganghwa Island. King Gojong then realized he had murdered an innocent man. It is said that every year on the 20th of the 10th lunar month, the anniversary of Sondol's murder, a strong cold wind blows across the strait where he was beheaded, conjured by his ghost, resentful and bitter for his wrongful death. Some versions of the legend say the regretful king built a tomb and performed rites to appease Sondol's soul. Today, the strait itself is called Sondol, and rites to appease the sailor's ghost are still performed annually. So there you go. That's something that's linked to the Soso, but also linked to the 20th day of the 10th lunar month as well. And then that brings us to another day, another Jeolgi that happens, or will be happening anyway this time, the 10th lunar month. And this is the Daesol, the opposite, which means big snow or great snow, but mostly references heavy snow. That's what this is supposed to really represent. So this is the 21st solar term. Happens on the 25th day of the 10th month. So closer to the traditional death date of Sondol, the ferryman. And that would be December 7th this year on the Gregorian calendar. So this is generally thought to be a time of the heaviest snowfall, but it's not the same for Korea or most of the peninsula anyway, because something to keep in mind is that these traditions, the roots of them anyway, are from China. So a lot of these traditions, these Jeolgi and the calendar itself, were rooted in things that were happening in the north of China. And so at the time when on the traditional calendar, when Daesol happens in the north of China, it's probably snowing, very heavy snow, but not necessarily the case in Korea, especially not in the south, like in Jeju-do, unless it's up in Halasan. And as I think Halasan had snow last night. I think
it did.
Right. And everyone's saying, oh, the first snow was so early this year. I'm like, how short are people's memories? We had snow in Saraksan last year on October 10th. So, I mean, it's not that early this year.
Yeah.
So, this kind of really highlights how the influence from China and these traditions didn't always fully impact Korea. So snow does fall in the higher mountains around this time. Very rarely get them in the snow in the city, but it is possible. Like I said, this time last year, I can't remember the exact day in November, but we had blowing snow. And I remember going through the along the tour, and there was snow kind of tucked away in pockets and corners along the street. So there was snow down. Anyway, and some weather lore connected to Daysaw is that heavy snow on the day foretold a mild winter. You had a mild winter coming and a good overall harvest. Excuse me. So that's the Daysaw, the second Jolgi in the 10th month. And just one more thing. This is something that's miscellaneous in modern times. Sometimes in the 10th lunar month, modern Koreans, third year high school students, have to suffer the terrible, frightening encounter with Sunung. Their university entrance exam.
They're less gotcha questions this year.
Got rid of those stupid killer questions. To, I remember people trying to argue. It's like, oh, but they were good because it separates people. It's like, separate who? Like,
yeah, I don't know. Who are the people that got the gotcha questions? They're the people who memorized it because they went to some Gangnam Hagwon.
It's ridiculous.
I don't see how that measures intelligence or capability at all.
I think Sunung should be entirely removed. Sunung should be optional. And if it was optional, no one would do it because
I feel that way about the SATs, all those standardized exams. You know what? Who knows? I mean, with technology and such, I don't know. You can come up with some better evaluation to let people into your institution and then do nothing with them.
There's different things in Korea now. There's the sushi as well as another type of exam, and then the remember sushi, not the way the Koreans pronounce it. Sushi.
I know.
And then what? Some of the universities, I'm sure, like Korea University, they have their own entrance exam that you have to take, and I think that's the way it should be. It should be your entire high school performance
That should all be put all together. I think they put the standardized one in because, you know, all secondary schools are different.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. It's ridiculous. And we're going to hear all these terrible tragic stories over the next few days about kids committing suicide. So
I haven't heard as many, though, lately, but maybe I wasn't paying attention.
I haven't seen, leading up to it. No, I mean,
last year's thing, you know, I don't remember. I don't know. But then again, those were, I mean, they were mostly still doing a lot of them offline, online.
Right. That's right. Last year they were. That's right. I think Sunung was still maybe largely online. This year it's not, though. All restrictions have been removed. So that happens on November 16th, which will be the fourth day of the 10th lunar month this year. So there you go. Just a little added bonus at the end there.
Yeah. All right. So, let's see. What do we have here? We do have our comics. You might have heard about them during the show. Yes. Wow. We're really getting through this latest printing really fast. Mostly just selling them on the tours, but you can also order them online. Our Dark Side of Soul comics, you can get on darksideofsoul.com. And you can find them in Seoul at Dyson Comics Cafe near the DCC Cafe or something like that. DCC Cafe?
DCC, yep. Yep.
Near Jeonghampyeong Station. Yeah. The Dark Side of Soul podcast is produced by Joe McPherson and Sean Morrissey. Our opening and closing music is by Sodak-san, which you can find on Bandcamp under Jeju Digital. We'd like to thank our top tier patrons, Angel Earl, Joel Bonamini, Sharon Cullen, Devin Hefner, Minsuk Lee, Gabby Palomino, Steve Marsh, Mitchie Brewer, Ron Chang, Mackenzie Moore, Hunter Winter, Cecilia Lufgren-Dumas, Emily Umbau, Josephine Riedberg, David Weatherly, and Janice Song. Thank you so much for supporting us. If you want to join our group, our nasty, nasty R-rated group, go to, because the conversations in our chat room are pretty funky. yeah, if you want to find out what's really happening behind the scenes, go to patreon.com/darksideassault. Starting just $5 a month, you can get a lot of extra content. And if you go to the top tier, $20 a month, you get a lot of extra stuff, including something really cute in your and disturbing in your mailbox once a month. And you get into this secret chat room everyone's talking about. All right. Yeah, well, thank you, everyone, for listening. Until next time, stay spooky.
Good night. Stay warm.